So, Parshas Vayera, what page are we on?
Page 78.
78 for those who want to look into a chumash.
Do you want a chumash?
Are
you one?
Yeah.
We're going to be starting off talking about the story of Sodom. So the story of Sodom actually has three different parts. You have the part where Hashem talks to Avram about Sodom. You have the part where Hashem destroys Sodom. And then you have the aftermath of what happens to Lot and his daughters after Sodom. So what's probably most fascinating, to me at least, because we haven't yet seen this, I guess, category, is that Hashem consults with Avram beforehand. Right? Because we've seen Hashem destroy things before. Right? We saw him destroy the world. We saw him destroy Migdal Bavel. Right? So we've seen Hashem punish people for their iniquities, for their problems, for whatever they're doing wrong. And we've also seen the world try to start over. Right, we've seen Adam and Chava start the world. We've seen Noah start the world. And then we saw Avram really start the world over again after Migdal Bavel. But what's interesting about the Sodom story is really what happens beforehand. Because we haven't yet seen Hashem consult with anybody else before he does one of these, you know, do-overs. Right, one of these reset buttons. So if we're going to actually understand what makes the story of Sodom a little unique, we have to really understand what's going on in this conversation. And then we can really get into what exactly happens during Sodom. So if we're going to start off, we're going to start with Perek Yud Ches, right? So the Perek Yud Ches, obviously at the beginning of the Parsha, but Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Yud Zayin. So the first part of the Parsha is really talking about Avram and Sarah, and their lack of children, and the angels coming to visit Avram after his bris milah, and then they come to talk to Avram about having a child, and then Sarah laughs, and her laughter is different from Avram's laughter from last week's parsha. Either way, the child's going to be called Yitzchak, one way or the other. The question is, what's the difference between their laughters? Some of Farshim say there is no difference. Some of Farshim explain that there's a big difference, that Avram's laughter was a joyful laughter, and Sarah's laughter was a laughter of disbelief, which is obviously more problematic. But we're not talking about that today. So here we have Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Yud Zayin. What's interesting is Sheni starts really from the first story, and Pasuk Yud Zayin starts a new story. Right? If you look in Sheni on page 80, Vatichachesh Sara leimor lo tzachachti ki araya, vayomer lo ki tzachacht. Right? Sarah denies the fact that she laughed. Right? She thought no one was watching, but obviously Hashem knew. And then she says, no, I didn't laugh because I was ki yareya, because she was afraid. That's why she said, according to the Art Scrolls translation at least, it says, I didn't laugh. And she says, and the reason she didn't laugh is because she was afraid. And then Avram says, no, ki tzachacht, you did laugh. And that's the end of it. And then the next pasuk starts a whole new thing. It's interesting that the rabbinic distinction of themes has that last pasuk in it, also for a different time. But the pasuk about Yud in pasuk Tazayim Akum Misham Hanashim, meaning the angels got up, Vayashtivu Apnei Sodom VaAvram Holech Imam LaShalcham, and then they went to look at Sodom, and Avram went with them, or at least escorted them out to send them out to Sodom. Interesting also the concept of angels having multiple jobs. Right? Typically we understand that angels have set job descriptions, and that's what they're supposed to do. The question is, how many of the angels actually left? Right? Because three come, and here it just says, Ve'akum misham ha'anashim. So some explain that it means three angels came, but only two left. Because the one that was brought to talk to Avram about, well, there are three different angels. So this is problematic either way. But the three angels that came, so one was coming to do what? One was coming to tell about Yitzchak, obviously. The other was coming to do Bikur Cholim. And the other one was going to Lot. So there's a big question in a lot of Mepharshim, how exactly this happens, that the angels were able to go to Avram and then to Sodom. It seems like someone's doubling up. Also not further than for now. Maybe we'll talk about some of these at a different time. But now let's get into the conversation about Sodom. And this first pasuk is probably the most, informative in terms of Avram and Hashem's relationship, which we already know is close, but it's clearly closer than maybe we've seen before. Vashem Amar. Hamachaseh ani mei Avraham asher ani oseh. So first, the most startling part about this pasuk is that we know it. Because until now, whenever Hashem speaks, it's really in the voice of the Torah. But now there's sort of like a narrator talking about Hashem, right? V'Hashem amar. Like usually when the Torah talks, it's Hashem talking, and then Avram did this, Yitzhak did this, Lot did this. Now it's Hashem amar, Hamchaseh ani mei Avraham. Hashem is sort of saying that I said, am I going to hold myself back from Avram? Like Hashem's giving us like the scene of the backstage, right? Before he does something, he's not going to explain to us why he's doing it.
Does it say who he's speaking to?
Exactly, it doesn't say. It says Hashem Amar. This is literally just for us. Hashem Amar to us. That's what makes it so fascinating, because the pasuk is not telling us of a dialogue. It's not talking about someone who said something to somebody else. Hashem Amar to all generations forever. So some people might say he's talking to the angels. What does Rashi say? I don't remember. Of course, behind on everything today. Doesn't say.
Yeah, your kids are all dressed.
You'd be surprised. I'm dressed. I clearly forgot my tie today. But Hashem Amar. Hamchaseh ani me'Avram asher ani oseh. Am I going to hold back from Avram? So I don't know who he's talking to. But it's clearly a message to us that Hashem feels the need to talk to Avram Avinu. Va'Avram hayo hayihyeh l'goy gadol v'atzum. And Avram's going to be a great nation. V'nivrchuvo kol klei ha'aretz. And all the generations are going to be blessed through him. Ki yedativ l'man asher yitzaveh espanav yaspeso acharav v'shamru derech Hashem asos zakom mishpah l'man havi Hashem al Avram es asher diver alav. So if I were to write this pasuk in one of my essays in school, I'd get one of those comments that I always get. This is a run-on sentence. You split it up into two. Hashem is packing a lot into this pasuk. Why is it that Hashem feels the need to sort of divulge or to reveal the plan to Avram? Ki. Pasuk starts with the word ki. Because yidativ, I know him, or I love him. Right, yada in biblical Hebrew can oftentimes mean a relationship, an intimacy. Leman, because I know him or I love him. Leman asher yitzav es banav, because therefore he will tell his children or instruct his children. V'asbeso achrav v'shamru derech Hashem, and they're going to do the ways of Hashem. La'asot tzedakah u'mishpat, to do justice and righteousness. Leman, that's a weird word because he already said leman, right? Usually Laman is giving a reason, and now he's giving another reason. So we had a word ki, we had a little word laman, and now we have another laman. Havi Hashem al Avraham es asher diber elav. So how does our scroll translate? For I have loved him, because he commands the children in his household after, right, so the pasuk starts with a four. For I have loved him, comma, because, now this because could be going on the original because, which is the reason why I'm telling Avram, or it could be going on why I loved him, or why I have loved him. So for I have loved him, because he commands his children and his household after him. So that's hard to say, because at least if it's in the past, that hasn't happened yet. Unless you're going to say only Yishmael, which is hard to say, because it sounds multiples, it sounds like a multiple education. Household after him, that they keep the way of Hashem, doing charity and injustice. And then you have another laman. It's the same word in the Hebrew, but in the art scroll it's different, because in order that Hashem might then bring upon Avram that which he had spoken of him. So a real mouthful here. That I have loved Avram because he teaches his children what to do so that they'll be rewarded in the ways that I told them he'd be rewarded. Right? So it's sort of like a three-stage process. The love we have is based on this common, you know, goal that we're doing the things of righteousness in the world, and that will hopefully lead to the reward for Avram. Now, this pasuk is not only loaded because of sort of the love letter nature of it, that I love Avram because of this, which is just itself a beautiful thing, that we can get sort of that insight into Hashem and Avram's relationship in such an explicit way, but it also is interesting because the Rambam quotes it in a very, famous concept. What's the Rambam known for? I guess it's probably a bad question because he's known for a lot of things. But there's one concept that the Rambam brought up in his Mishneh Torah, in his sort of magnum opus of halacha at least, which is called the golden mean. What's the golden mean? Right, going in the mean, in the middle. Right, not too much like this, not too much like that. Right, Goldilocks. Right, got to go right in the middle. Right, there are only two examples of that. What are the two exceptions to that? Two exceptions of going in the middle. Anyone know? Anyone read? Have anyone ever learned this Rambam before? What are the two things, if you had to guess, that you're not allowed to go in the middle? You have to go to the extreme. So one is anger. You can never be angry. It's an interesting concept because there's clearly instances of Hashem's anger. So clearly what it means to be angry according to the Rambam is not the same thing as Hashem's anger. Right? We talked last night in Mishlei Shir for the... Nope, never mind. Last night... Aviva was here. Were you here? Yeah, so Aviva was here. Last night in Mishlei Shir we talked about how anger can be in one of two ways. Anger can be because you want to take revenge on somebody. You did something to me, I'm going to do something back. Or anger can be in order to discipline. And even though you might display anger, like real, implanting fear in another person, it's really in order so that they become better. And as we talked about last night, Musar Hashem b'ni al timas, that when Hashem gives you yisurin, and He gives you difficulties, don't be disgusted by it, don't be deterred by it. Hashem's just trying to make you better. So that's probably what the anger is that we're trying to talk about in parenting and teaching and stuff like that. It might look like anger, but hopefully it's not real anger. So when the Rambam says you can never be angry, that's one of the two exceptions. You have to go all the way to the extreme. Never be angry. There's no middle ground when it comes to anger. That's because real anger should never actually happen. And then the other example, sort of on the other side of the extreme, is humility. Which is also interesting because the Gemara tells us that a person has to have a shminis sheva shminis of chutzpah. So what does it mean to be humble all the time? So both of these have exceptions to the exceptions. But generally the Rambam tells us in this halacha, in the second source in your sheets, ketzed yargil adam atzma v'deos elu atchi kavu bo, yasev yishnev yishalish. A person should do something, he should repeat it, he should do it a third time, v'masim she'osa al piyateos ha'mitzalios. That a person should do these things over and over again in the way that's in the middle. Emtza. Emtza uyot. V'yachzor behem tamid ashu ma'aseim kalim alav. And you should do them so much that they become sort of second nature. V'lo yeh behem torach alav yikavu hadeus benafsho. And they shouldn't be a burden anymore. Right? When you go through certain activities, certain personality traits enough in a mechanical way or in a... artificial way, so ultimately they become part of you, right? This is the famous, not mine. This is the famous concept, the famous line from the Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch, we don't know who wrote it, so I can't quote to you who was, but probably that is mine. 11th century Spain, or 12th century Spain, and the Sefer HaChinuch says early on in his book, which is really talking about all the mitzvot of Hashem, that Hashem gives us mitzvot in order to embed them into our persona, right? The acharei ha-pu'ulos nimshach mahalavavos, that after our actions comes our hearts. That when we do something enough, it'll become part of us. So here the Rambam is saying, similarly, do one thing over and over and over again, it'll become part of you. But you have to do the middle thing, not the extremes. Ulufi she'ashemos ha'elu nikra ben ha-yotzer, ve'im ha-derech ha-beinunis she'anu chayvim lechas ba. Nikreis derech ze, zo derech Hashem. Because these are the things that Hashem does, or Hashem is called these different things, right? Chanun, Rachum, things like that. So then, that's what's called derech Hashem. Where do we see an example of the word derech Hashem? Our pasuk. Pasuk we just said. The pasuk says in Bereshit Yirchas Yotes, ki yedativ laman asher yitzaveh v'gomer. Right? And if you know the reason I'm sort of divulging my plan to Avram is because I love him, that he tells his children, Vishamru Derech Hashem, you shall keep the Derech Hashem. Now it's interesting, it's not exactly clear what the Rambam is bringing this pasuk for. Because usually when the Rambam, we know from manuscripts that we have, was very meticulous about why he said every single little word. The way he said the word, the order he said the words. Here it sounds like he's just quoting a pasuk which has the phrase Derech Hashem, which doesn't seem like something which is necessarily so important to quote for bolstering his argument. But that's what he says. V'hi shelimid Avram avinu l'avanav. This is what Avram taught his children to go in the Derech Hashem. Let's see if we can come back to this a little bit later. What happens during the destruction of Sodom? Right, Hashem brings himtir al Sodom v'hal amor gafris va'esh. He brings sulfurous fire. Me'ez Hashem in Hashemayim v'yahafoch ha'sarim ha'el. And he destroys all of these cities that are in Sodom and Amorah. V'yez kol akikar in all of the plains. V'yez kol yoshvei ha'arim. And all of the people that are settled in the land. V'tzemach ha'adama. And also the plant life. V'atabet ishto me'acharav. And his wife looks behind her, or behind him, behind them. V'atihi nitziv melach. And she slash it becomes a pillar of salt. Anyone ever heard of this? Right? The pillar of salt. Now, I had an architecture teacher in YU. I have a minor in architecture. Not that it's taken me anywhere far, but the teacher would always tell us that when you think about those things that stand up straight, those are not pillars. Anyone know this? This was it sounds like his shtick, but he would always say, those are columns. Oh. Columns are physical things, or pilasters, depending on what they look like. Right? Columns are things that hold buildings up. The word pillar is, and this is his words, the word pillar is reserved for figurative speech. Right? Just, you know, a figure of speech, something that you use colloquially, but not to actually mean a physical being. So, for instance, he would say, a pillar of a community, someone who holds a community up. That's a pillar. And then he would say, like, a pillar of salt. Figurative language. He was a Reformed Jew, so he didn't really have to, he wasn't bound by the literacy of the Torah. But the truth is that this pasuk is very strange. Right? It seems very odd. Right? Hashem brings fire down onto the place, and then it says, she turned around. We don't know who she is. Presumably, Lot's wife. V'tabit ishto me'acharav. V'tihi nitziv melach. And she was a pillar of salt. It's kind of an interesting phrase. Like, who cares what Lot's wife became? So on the one hand, we have the sort of literal understanding that she literally became a pillar of salt. There's a place in Israel that's called Lot's wife or something, right? Have you been? I've never been there.
Near the Dead Sea.
So I don't know if that's really the right place, but it's cute. Is there like some kind of formation or something? That's why it's called that? There are a lot of Lot's wives. But someone's talking about polygamy tonight.
Yeah.
Who's that? Oh, yeah? Very nice.
She was doing Moshe. She was the second wife.
Of Moshe?
Well, Hashem was his first wife.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Cute. I like it.
Other figures.
Right. So if you look at the Rabbeinu Bechaya actually quotes the Ibn Ezra. I could have brought the Ibn Ezra, but the Rabbeinu Chai quotes two things. Kasav HaChacham Rabbeinu Avram Ibn Ezra, Vatehi Ha'aretz. That it's not referring to Lot's wife. Vatehi Ha'aretz. V'al Derech Razah Vatehi Ishto. So according to the Ibn Ezra, that the Pasuk is talking about Vatehi is referring to the land. It's not referring to Lot's wife. Right? Lot's wife makes for a good child story. Makes for a good class in day school. But literally, it's referring to the land. And this makes sense in some ways because it's not normal for a person to become salty. But similarly, it's also it also works with the verse right beforehand because the pasuk said, Gafris va'esh, right? There sulfur came down. So sulfur is like a substance of some kind. And malach could be a general term of like a spice or it's, you know, she looked back and it's all rubble. It became a place of salt. It makes a little sense because it doesn't necessarily say a volcano. Interesting, I don't know. She looked back and saw that it became salt. Now, another corroborating evidence for the rabbinic interpretation, which is that she became a pillar of salt, is we never hear from Lot's wife again. Right? The aftermath of the story is what? Right? Lot goes, meets Zoar, and he goes with his daughters. What does he have to do with his daughters for? Go with your wife. Obviously, his wife's not around. So either she went somewhere else, or she actually became a pillar of salt. But what's interesting is we don't have much of an aftermath of this story. It's kind of like, okay, bye, honey, right? It's been nice knowing you.
It could be sort of a blend of the two. She turned around or she stopped and she got hit by the...
Right, maybe.
And, you know, when it turns that hot, it actually everything's disintegrated and then you have
right.
a little hole in the ground.
That's beforehand. The angels say that. Avram doesn't say that. But when the angels go to... Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty explicit, actually, which is sort of like foreboding. You know, it's like when the movie says, don't press that button. You're like, you know they're going to press the button at some point, right? So when the angels say, don't turn around, you know someone's got to turn around, right? So this is also what happens to Lot's wife. But the truth is, I think we can understand a little bit deeper as to what exactly is going on in Sodom through Lot's wife. And I think the metaphor of salt is actually a very telling and informative metaphor. Because what is salt? Do we have another instance of the importance of salt in the Torah? Is there any other time where the Torah tells us something very important about salt? Maybe a mitzvah involving salt. Karbanos. What does it say? If you look at the... Yeah. Vayikra Beis Yud Gimel on the back of the sheet. See, sorry, there's a Rashi in between. We'll get back to the Rashi. V'chol karban min chascha b'melach timlach. Every carbon that you have should be salted with salt. V'lo sashbis melach bris alakacha miyam min chascha. And you shouldn't leave tashbitu, like on Pesach. You get rid of your chametz. Don't get rid of the salt. Because the salt is a covenant with Hashem. Al kol karbancha takriv melach. On every one of your karbanos, you should bring salt. Now, what is the modern day equivalent of this? Or the modern day extension of this, I should say?
Salt on the table when you put it on your challah.
Okay, good. It's interesting that you said that in two phrases. Mm-hmm. You said first, salt on the table when you put it on your challah. So a couple things just to clear up the halacha for a second. So first of all, the literal understanding of the Shulchan Aruch is to have salt on the table. It doesn't ever say to dip the challah in salt. Kabbalistically, we're supposed to dip the challah in salt, and it's specifically challah in salt, not sprinkle the salt on top. Okay. Dip the challah in the salt three times. What it represents, I don't know. But if you're going to be doing that, so do it the way that it was told, you know, said to be done. The Shulchan Aruch itself just says to have salt on the table, similar to the carbon. The carbon wasn't like necessarily mixed in with salt. It could have been. But it says, with all of your carbonos, bring salt. It doesn't say anything about mixing it in or anything like that. But why do we bring salt into a carbon? And perhaps this is actually understood better by understanding what you're not supposed to bring into a carbon. What are you not allowed to bring into a carbon?
Flour.
Honey. Flour depends. When are you allowed to bring flour?
Amincha.
Amincha is only flour. And what about inside of another carbon? What other, I guess, avoda involves flour? The lachme toda, right? The carbon toda. Or the shtei halachem on Shavuos. But that's a whole other thing. Maybe like Pesach, we could talk about that because they always sort of overlap Pesach and those parshios, Vayikra and Tzav. But when it comes to honey, so it says you're not allowed to have honey, right? Why can't you have honey into a carbon, but you can have salt? What kind of diet is that, right? No honey, but yes salt. You have to have salt. What's the difference between honey and salt? What do we use salt for?
Kashering.
Kashering, okay. What does the salt do? It brings the stuff out of it, right? So salt, in some ways, when you put it into something, it's in order to bring the flavors out, right? If you can't taste something, you put more salt in. It brings the flavors out. And what about honey?
It covers the taste.
It covers it. You're adding something. Hey, Dove, you need me? Come. Come around. Okay, you can come straight up to the front. You can take your coat off if you want. If Alco wants, you can bring that too. So, what's the difference between honey and salt? So salt brings out what's inside of an item, brings it out, or brings it more significant. And honey, on the other hand, doesn't bring anything from internally out, but it's adding something externally. So when we bring a carbon, what is the word carbon reference? It's a reference to us becoming closer to Hashem. Right? We are karev et atzmenu. We're bringing ourselves. Right? So when we're trying to represent ourselves in a carbon, what does Hashem want to hear from us? He wants to hear us. He doesn't want to hear anything from the outside. He doesn't want any artificial sweeteners. If you're going to be sweet, it's got to come from inside. I want to know the real you. When we come close to each other, don't misrepresent yourself. Right? Bring the salt so that I can really get to know you. But don't bring honey, because that's not you. Honey is external. Honey is outside of yourself. We can talk about this a little later by Pesach. So when we look at this pasuk also, v'chol karban chamenchas chamel chotimlach, when you put salt in a carbon, you're trying to bring out who you already are. So if we were going to then superimpose that concept of putting salt into a carbon, superimpose that concept onto Lot's wife, what does it mean, Vatihi Nitziv Melach? She became a pillar of salt. So it's unclear that she became herself. What am I getting at? What about Nitziv? Right, so we got the Melach part. She's herself. What about Nitziv? What does the word Nitziv mean?
Standing.
Doesn't the word Omed mean standing? So what's the why doesn't it say Vati Amud Melach? An Amud is a pillar or a column. Why does it say Nitziv Melach? Where else do we have the word Nitziv? We have it by the Parsha in the Sun. We actually have it at the beginning of this week's Parsha. Right? Ushlosha Anashim Nitzavim Alav. Right? That Avram saw the angels and they were standing there. What does it mean? Alav? Not clear. But Rashi says that Vayar, it says Vayar twice because he saw that they were standing there. Meaning the people came, but they didn't want to come because they knew Avram was in pain. So they stood there. They were stopped. So then Avram goes and runs after them. Right? But they were stopped. Nitziv means I'm stuck in a place. Nitzavim, Rashi tells us in the second source on the back of the page, Nitzavim hayom kulchem. Atem nitzavim hayom kulchem. Kayom hazesh hu kayam. That you, the Jewish people, are here like a day. The day is always going to be there. Shehu kayam v'hu ma'afil u'me'ir. That the day is what? Gets darker and then it gets lighter. If you have to think about this for a second, Rashi is talking about what came right before this. Hi. Come. Come here. It's okay. Come here. Yeah. So what happens right before? What's right before Parsha in 7? What Parsha is right before in 7? Kisavo. What's at the end of Kisavo? What's at the end of Kisavo? The second Tochacha. The second Tochacha is all about the things that we get punished for when we don't do well. In the aftermath of the Tochacha, the pasuk tells us, Hashem tells us, Moshe says, Atem nitzavim hayom kulchem lifnei Hashem elokechem. It doesn't matter what just happened. It doesn't matter that it just gave you all these curses, all these terrible things that are going to happen to you. You're still nitzavim hayom kulchem. You're all still going to stay in front of Hashem. Says Rashi, just like the day and the night, it'll have a cycle. Ma'afil u'meir, sometimes it'll look dark, and sometimes it'll look light. This is a hearkening back to our 2 weeks ago when we talked about Noah. I don't know if you were privy to the class, but we talked about the difference between the raven and the dove, darkness and light. But when it comes to this, says Rashi, it's hayom. Ma'afil u'meir, when it's so dark and it becomes light, sometimes it looks bad and it's going to look good. V'haklalos v'hayisun mekaymin eschem. And all these things will give you or substantiate you. Umatsivin eschem lefanav. They're all going to be there, but you're always going to be right in front of Hashem. Nitzavim. Yeah. Nitzavim means you're going to be entrenched or embedded right in front of Hashem. You're never going to move. It doesn't matter what happens to you. You're always going to be in the same spot. Lifnei Hashem Elokeichem. So the word nitziv, as opposed to omed is by happenstance. You happen to be standing up. It happens to be, you know, upwards. Nitzavim means you're entrenched. You're there and you're staying there. You're not moving. So what is Vayetehi Nitziv Melach? That she wasn't just, it just didn't happen to be there. She didn't happen to just stand there. She was entrenched in that moment, in that spot. What am I getting at? So we have a long-standing Mesorah about why she became a pillar of salt. It looks like I took it off of the papers. But why is it that she became a pillar of salt? What did you say? Oh, it's on the top. So the truth is that this Rabbeinu Bechaye, I don't know who translated it. I got it off of some database, but they're translating something else. But if you look on the right side, so it says, someone came to her house and said, hey, can we have salt? She said no. So she became a pillar of salt because she didn't give them any salt. And then if you look at the English side, a different interpretation of the same midrash. Our sages, Bereshit Rabbah 51:5, understand that Lot's wife turned into salt herself as punishment for having asked her neighbors for salt on the previous evening to alert them to the fact that her husband was entertaining guests, which was against the law of the place. So what does that mean, against the law of the place? Sodom was very insular. Sodom was, we are who we are and no one else is allowed in. Right, and when and Lot's wife took that to the extreme, that when someone came to her house, she wouldn't even give them any salt. I've got what I've got, and no one else can have what I have. You have to fend for yourself. Very much, we're stuck in our ways. Nobody else in, nobody else out. You can't change anything. It would seem, therefore, that we could maybe suggest that Vatehi Nitziv Melach is not simply the fact that she became salt just because. But rather, Vatehi Nitziv Melach was actually indicative or was a metaphor for how she viewed her life. That she wanted to be stuck in her ways. She wanted to stay there. She wanted melach. She wanted to be like salt. Not do anything extra. Anything that I already have, I'm going to stick with. That's the karban. That's the idea of the karban. That when we connect to Hashem, we're providing our own selves and nothing more. No honey from the outside. Just salt. We're going to stick to who we are. In this situation, however, it's a negative attribute. Because she was sticking to who she was. She didn't want to change. She didn't want to include anybody else in the community. She didn't want to help anybody else in the community. Just sticking to who she was. And that's also, presumably, what it means when the pasuk says, "Vatabet ishto me'achorav," that she's looking backwards. What does it mean she's looking backwards? Obviously, literally, it looks she's looking back at the city. But figuratively, it means she's looking backwards at Sodom. She wants to stay in Sodom, right? You can picture it in her the look on her face, looking back and yearning to be back in Sodom, to have that life again. She doesn't want to move forward. She doesn't want to go to Tzoar. She doesn't want to go to the mountains. She doesn't want to go somewhere else. She wants to stick in her place, to not progress at all. And specifically in terms of progression, not just in terms of her own progress, but also in terms of other people's, you know, involvement in her own life. She wants to stick to herself. I find what's interesting about this a few different things, but we have first a couple interesting connections, one Hasidish and one biblical. The pasuk tells us in Koheles, Shlomo Melech says, Al tomar mahaya, shehayamim harishonim hayu tovim me'ele. Don't ever say that the days before now were greater than they are today. Or why were they greater then? Kilo mechachma sha'atazeh. Because that's not chachma, that's not wise. Wisdom means that you're always looking forward, not looking backwards. This happens to be my yearbook quote. I don't know why I chose it. But in my high school yearbook, I put this pasuk on as if to say basically like, we've had a great time in high school, let's make it even better later. But another interesting Hasidish teich on something we say very often. So typically we understand that to say that we will always bless Hashem from now and forever. But the truth is, it could also be understood to the exclusion of the past. That whatever happened in the past is in the past. Maybe in the past, things happened, could have been better, but now it's a new story. Now we're continuing onward, forward, elsewhere. What I find also an interesting connection, and I just made this connection this morning, I'm still working on it in some ways. There's an interesting rokeach. It's not on your sheets, it's on my sheet because I didn't have enough time to reorganize the papers to make it fit. There's an interesting rokeach. The rokeach tells us, does anyone know why do we take three steps forward before we start Shemoneh Esrei? Anyone ever hear?
We're approaching Hashem.
Why three steps? Could approach with one step, we could approach with five steps, 10 steps. I've seen people do many steps. It's a formality. But why is that the formality? Of course, it has a reason to it, right? So there actually are different understandings, different stories in Tanakh. But the Rokeach brings a fascinating idea, which is that there are three times in the Torah, or in Tanakh, where the word Vayigash is used in order to connote in order to introduce a conversation or really a request of some kind. Anyone know what the three Vayigashes are? Okay, probably the easiest one. Vayigash Elav Yehuda, that Yehuda comes to Yosef. I think, I didn't know anyone that well back then, but on Friday night, when I tried out, I went to the Leib's house for an oneg, and I said over this rokeach. I don't know if anyone was there. You don't have to out yourself now. But Vayigash Elav Yehuda is one of them. Yehuda comes to beseech Yosef. He doesn't know it's Yosef, but he comes to beseech Yosef to let Binyamin go. That's one Vayigash. What's another Vayigash? So another one is by Eliyahu at Har HaKarmel. And it says there, Vayhi ba'alos ha-mincha ve'igash Eliyahu ha-navi vayomer Hashem Elokei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yisrael hayom yivadak yata Elokim b'Yisrael. Right, this is where he's at Mount Carmel and he's bringing the karbanos and telling them to do their karban, see if it works, I'll do mine, whatever. So that's Vayigash Eliyahu ha-navi. Oh, watch what happens here. Yep. So Eliyahu uses over there the words of Vayigash. Okay. It uses over there the pasuk Vayigash, the word Vayigash. So that's two. What's the third one? Anyone know? He looks back at the first source. Hashem says, "How can I keep it from Avram? And I know him, I love him, etc." That the people of Sodom and Amor are so bad. And two pesukim later it says, "Vayigash Avraham vayomar ha'af tispet tzadikim rasha." Are you going to kill the tzadikim with the rashaim? What if there are tzadikim in the city? Hashem says, if there were tzadikim, I wouldn't kill it. Right? I wouldn't destroy them. What if there are, you know, then he works down 50, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10. So this is the third Vayigash. It's really the second Vayigash. The first Vayigash. Yeah, he's looking for it. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no 2 seconds.
It's good for his immune system. So that's the third Vayigash. What is the Vayigash of Avram? If we had to look at these three Vayigashes, what are the differences between these three Vayigashes? So obviously, Vayigash Elav Yehuda sticks out the most because it's really not talking to Hashem at all. Avram is talking to Hashem. Eliyahu is talking about Hashem. Yehuda is talking to Yosef. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. So I talked about that Friday night, how the Vayigash of Yehuda is understanding himself. That one of the things that we have to understand when we go into Shemoneh Esrei, we have to know ourselves. Before we say to Hashem, I want this, I should be better at this, please give me that, we have to know who we are. Who are we to talk to Hashem? Where do we lack strengths? Where do we need improvements? Right? So we say before we go into Shemoneh Esrei, bless you, to going to Hashem and asking Him for something, we have to first know ourselves. Secondly, Eliyahu. What was Eliyahu's scene all about? Eliyahu's episode is knowing about Hashem. He's trying to tell the Jewish people, stop worshiping Baal and start worshiping Hashem, or exclusively Hashem. Right? What's the pasuk over there? Admasai rochven al shtei susim, or something like that. What's the pasuk? You know? You're riding both horses, or something like that. Right? Or al shtei seifim. Not susim, seifim. Two sides of the fence. So that's what Eliyahu is trying to teach about Hashem. So number one of the steps, and because of the three vayigashes, that's why I have the three steps. One of the steps is for yourself, that's Yehuda. One of the steps is to know Hashem, that's Eliyahu. What's Avram's? Vayigash Avraham vayomar ha'af tispet tzadikim rasha. It's for other people. And as we know, there are three types of mitzvos. What are the three kinds of mitzvos? There's mitzvos ben adam lamakom, things that we do for Hashem, like Shabbos and tefillin. And then there's ben adam lachavero, like tztaka and bikur cholim. And then we have ben adam le'atzmo. What's an example of ben adam le'atzmo? Everyone knows the category, but what are the examples? It's not, is it true? This is probably definitely the smallest of the examples. But davening could be one of those examples. That davening is not, in many ways, for us, that's why it's lehit palel. Right, it's reflexive. And let's say like teshuva. Well, I guess teshuva is to Hashem. But there are aspects of every mitzvah. There are good examples, and I'm not thinking of them now.
Learning
has an aspect of it that's for yourself. That's right. But either way, similarly with the three steps when we come to Hashem. As we know, Shemoneh Esrei is not phrased in the singular. Right, it's not saying. It doesn't say, you know, rofei choli. Right, to it says rofei cholim. It doesn't say ata. It's a sheesh reiv anyenu. Right, reiv sheesh gaalnu. like every pasuk, every hashiva shoftenu, right. Right, everything is phrased in the collective, right? So when we approach Shemoneh Esrei, obviously there's an aspect which is for ourselves. Shema Koleinu, however, is for everybody. So we have to have three components. We have to know who Hashem is, right? That's the beginning of Shemoneh Esrei, understanding who Hashem is, right? We also have to know ourselves. That's Yehuda. We also have to know everybody else. That's presumably Avraham. I'm really working on that. But that's Avraham. And I think in some ways that's the contrast of Avraham to Lot's wife. Because as opposed to Lot's wife, who was excluding everybody else, Avraham was including everybody else. Right? And this is presumably, and this is the sort of the part that I'm working on from this morning, which is that one of the three steps that we just talked about, Vayigash, are not the three steps back, they're the three steps forward. And Lot's wife was the one that was the Tinitziv Melach. She was stuck in place. One of the three steps is including others. Progressing forward means to include others. Lot's wife wanted to stick in place, to keep to herself. Avram is one of the three steps forward, to keep going forward, to keep going onward. That progression is indicative of the difference between Avram and Lot's wife. So there's obviously what to continue with this theme, and we could talk about it in other ways also. But this is what I wanted to sort of give over about the Tehi Netziv Melech. That the Netziv Melech was not just simply some kind of freak accident or you know, just a Mita Keneged Mita, but it's a deep Mita Keneged Mita. Not just, oh, she did something bad with salt, here's something bad that's going to happen to her with salt. But it's indicative of what the metaphor of salt is, that she was stuck in her ways. And as opposed to Lot's wife, Avram was the person who was including other people, was moving forward. And now I think we can understand a little bit better what it means at the beginning that Hashem understands who Avram was. Why is it that Hashem, Hamchase ani me Avram, how could I keep this from Avram, means because Avram was the antidote of Sodom. Avram, ki dativ, es asher yitzav es banav. What was Avram? He's going to continue everything. He's the one that's going to give it over. He's going to teach his children to keep it going. As opposed to Lot's wife, who was all about herself, to keep it insular, to make sure it's not including anybody else. Avram was trying to spread the word of Hashem. As we know about Avram, he was keeping it outside of himself. He was keeping it going further. That's why it's Hamchasani me Avram. That's the dialogue between Hashem and Avram was all about this specific nekuda of involving other people. Hashem says, I know you're the one that's going to continue and involve other people with this. Because of that, I have to tell you about Sodom. And Avram's response is, aren't there people that we can save over there? Meaning Avram's dialogue with Hashem is specifically, okay, do you know where the bathroom is? Okay, let's go to the bathroom. And that's Avram's entire theme. You can sort of work on that in yourself in terms of this theme. But that's what Netziv Melech, the metaphor of being stuck in her ways, is referenced by the pillar of salt. Salt being only yourself and nothing else, which we learn by Karbanos. Netziv means stuck, like Netzavim Hayom Kolchem. And the antidote, the opposite of that, is Avram Avinu himself, who tried to include other people, give over to other people, and that's the step of Shemona Esrei, stepping forward, not staying in place, going into our Shemona Esrei to understand about other people, to include other people, as opposed to Lot's wife. So, a little bit of a crazy day, but hopefully something to think about and to understand for this week's Parsha. Everyone should have a wonderful week.